Today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Cash and Carry Kitchens. Transform your home with the warmth of an Irish-made kitchen. Cashandcarrykitchens.ie.
Now, though, food supplies around the globe have begun to feel the strain of an increasingly fragile planet, leading to shortages of some products and soaring prices. One consequence of all of this is food fraud. But what does that really look like? Well, to tell us more, I'm joined now by RTE business journalist Adam Maguire. Hello, Adam.
Hi, Claire. How are you?
Good to see you. So what's food fraud?
Yeah, a very broad term. In short, though, it's where food or drink is sold in a way that's deceptive to the consumer. So it's usually an attempt to get more money from something than what it's actually worth. So in practice, it could mean a lot of things, like pretending a product is one thing when it's actually another, or diluting it with a cheaper, inferior ingredient and not declaring that on the label, importantly. It might be a product that claims to have a certain origin, you know, saying it's made in Ireland when it's actually been imported from somewhere else. Or it could just be a straight up counterfeit, like, you know, food or drink that's made to look like a branded product when it's actually not. And, you know, there are obviously loads of potential risks involved in this, not least the fact that people could be paying more for something than they really should. Not to mention, of course, that ultimately they're probably funding criminals if they do so. But perhaps more concerning are some of the, you know, the health risks that fraud can create. Because obviously when, you know, you have something in a food or a drink that isn't declared on the label, it could be a problem for someone who's excluding certain types of food for ethical reasons or for dietary reasons or for religious reasons. And it could be a health risk as well, because, you know, people would have allergies or intolerances. And there have even been cases where toxic substances were added to food and drink, which led to people getting seriously ill and even dying as a result of food fraud.
So how big of a problem is it then in the whole food chain?
Yeah, it's estimated that the fraudulent goods represent about 1% of the global food chain, which sounds relatively small, but it's the global food chain. So you're talking about hundreds of millions of kilos of food and drink at that 1%. It said that the fraud costs the global industry somewhere in the region of $40 billion in lost value each year. And that's in part because food fraud tends to be targeted towards the kind of higher end of the industry, because that's where the biggest reward is, obviously, for fraudsters. And it's particularly common in product categories where you would have a cheaper version as well as a more expensive version. So think of the likes of wine or olive oil as an example that. But the cost of the industry isn't just the money that's being spent on fraudulent goods that could have gone, you know, into genuine products, but also because it has a massive knock-on impact that, you know, on businesses and on the whole industry when fraud is identified and dealt with.
Now, Ireland has had its own high-profile experience with food fraud. Remind us.
Yeah, and this is a really good example of the knock-on consequences that food fraud can have, because we're now more than 10 years on from the horse meat scandal, but the industry here is probably still recovering to some degree from the reputational damage and the loss of trust that came on the back of that. So a reminder for people who may have forgotten the details, the horse meat scandal came to light in early 2013. The Food Safety Authority of Ireland revealed that it identified horse meat in a range of products that were labelled as beef. So that included the likes of frozen beef burgers, some ready meals, and, you know, they claimed to be beef, but some of the samples tested were actually 100% horse meat. Some other samples also had traces of pork in them. And while it did start here, it quickly developed into a European scandal, because the producers at the centre of the controversy had supplied products to brands and retailers in the UK and other countries. And once the FSAI raised the alarm, authorities in other countries started conducting investigations. And ultimately, they found a web of companies all across the region that had processed, bought or sold contaminated meat. In the end, you know, it became clear that everything from retailers to hotels to care homes had all been affected by the problem in some way or another. And, you know, it's a good sign of how a food fraud can mount in terms of cost, because the horse meat scandal obviously led to recalls of products across Europe. There was a lot of money spent notifying customers what they should do if they had the product in their fridge or freezer. But there was so much reputational damage done to the industry as well. Hard to quantify, but, you know, people would have been reluctant to return to those products even after the supply chain had been, you know, cleaned. Mm-hmm. Not to mention the producers, who would have had to then rebuild trust with the companies they supplied after the scandal.
All right, so that's a good example of how it can happen. And what other examples of food fraud have there been?
Yeah, well, without wanting to downplay the seriousness of the horse meat scandal, it at least didn't involve a major risk to public health. Well, the same can't be said of China's baby formula scandal. This was where a toxic chemical called melamine was added to the milk used in baby formula. And it was done because the producers had watered down the milk because they wanted to make more money from what they had, but it still had to pass quality control testing. So to do that, they added melamine, which made it seem as though it had a higher protein content than was actually the case. But melamine can cause kidney problems when it's consumed, including kidney stones and ultimately kidney failure. And in the end, Chinese authorities identified hundreds of thousands, around 300,000 babies and children that were affected by the contaminated formula. Tens of thousands of them ended up in hospital. At least six deaths were connected to the contamination as well. And the impact of the fraud was exacerbated by the fact that when it first came to light, there was kind of an attempt to downplay it. It coincided with the Beijing Olympics, and authorities didn't want this moment of positive PR to be hindered by a scandal like this. It meant that, you know, even when one producer, Sanlu, started their product recall, they didn't mention the fact that there was potentially lethal contamination in the products. And it took weeks before there was a wider investigation in the industry, and lots of other producers were found to have the same problem as well. So it really delayed them actually getting on top of the problem.
Mm-hmm. So we have the specific examples then of the horse meat and the baby milk formula. Where else, though, has food fraud been identified?
Yeah, loads of different areas. Like, one other example of food fraud that's in the spotlight lately is around honey, specifically the discovery of some so-called, you know, honey actually containing sugar syrup, which is a lot cheaper. But part of the problem is how vague producers can be around the origins of the honey that they have in their jar or their bottle. You know, if the moment if you look on a label, it will say, you know, it comes from within EU or outside the EU. And you'll even have some labels that are, say, you know, made up of EU and non-EU sources, which is meaningless. You
yeah,
know, it means it comes from anywhere in the
world.
We
covered this recently on the programme. It is a big problem, but it has been identified now. And,
yes,
and I think it's going to be, that loophole is going to be closed.
There are plans, yeah, now in Europe that you'll have to detail the top four countries that the origins are and the percentage of the honey. There are also going to be more traceability around beekeepers in Europe as well, which will hopefully go some way to solving that problem. And I mentioned olive oil, though, as another example of fraud, because, of course, you have different qualities of olive oil. You have, you know, different price points attached. Last year, police in Spain and Italy seized 5,000 litres of olive oil as part of an investigation into a gang that was buying low-quality oil, mixing it in such a way that they could pass it off as higher-quality extra virgin olive oil. You know, that could be adding colourings or flavourings or mixing with other types of oil to get the fat content right. And Italian authorities seem to be very busy with this kind of thing. Just 2 weeks ago, they made arrests relating to a counterfeit wine operation. Again, this involved cheaper wine being sold off as high-end stuff. So you had cheap Italian wine that was passed off as very expensive French wine that was worth up to 15,000 euro a bottle.
Sorry, I'm laughing because if you're paying 15 grand for a bottle of wine,
But that's what's incredible about it, though, that like they obviously
that
did
they
such
notice.
A good job of faking the labels and the wine seals and everything. They sold on to wine traders, specialist wine traders, who didn't notice the difference and then traded on as well. You wonder when they opened the bottle, did anyone notice? Or did they just say, this is amazing,
wonder,
worth
you?
Every penny. But,
Now, if you're not buying expensive wine or maybe even very expensive olive oil, are you probably okay?
Well, not necessarily, because, you know, it does tend to be the higher end of the market. But as we saw from the horse meat scandal, which was very much at the kind of standard end, if you want, or even the lower end, it can happen really at any level. As long as there's money to be made by passing one thing off as another or diluting something and the consumer not noticing, criminals are going to give it a go. So there was a case in the US a couple of years ago where what was supposed to be Parmesan cheese was actually had as little as 2% Parmesan in it. The rest was fillers and additives like cellulose, which is kind of wood pulp.
Isn't it?
Yeah, and it isn't necessarily expensive to begin with, Parmesan cheese, but obviously criminals felt, well, we can make more money by passing off this fake version as well. Cases where herbs and spices are mixed with other products like flour, chalk or other cheaper herbs and spices. It happens with ground coffee as well. And apparently seafood is really vulnerable to fraud because a lot of varieties of fish look and even taste pretty much the same to each other. So relatively easy for a cheaper type to be mislabeled and sold off at a higher price without a consumer actually noticing.
Yeah, and we do operate on trust. You know, if it says
to
it on the label,
degree, yeah.
That's what we think
we're
buying.
You know, you would have to have a sophisticated lab to really know for certain when you're buying things. You have to trust it.
Is that how we know? Is that how we find out that food fraud has happened?
Yeah, like the FSIA is the lead authority in Ireland, and they would conduct random testing as they did with the horse meat scandal on products to make sure that they are what they claim to be. They'd also expect producers to have a record of where they're getting their ingredients from. Ideally, you would have a clear chain that you could go all the way back to the point of origin and know the traceability of it. It's not always the case, though. But of course, you know, food industry, it's global, it's complicated. Supply chains are very complex and always changing. So you can have a product that's being made in Europe, say, and the raw ingredients are coming from countless different suppliers dotted around the place, and they're getting supplied from countless more around the world. So very, very hard to keep on top of that. I suppose one of the positives of the horse meat scandal is the fact that there's now greater cooperation between food safety authorities across Europe. They set up on the back of that the Agri-Food Fraud Network, They share information and coordinate investigations to try and better deal with fraudsters. And there was a rise in the number of suspected fraud cases last year, up 26%. Some of that related to the illegal trade of cats and dogs. But lots of the things we spoke about were found, you know, around suspicions around honey, olive oil, wine and so on. Also things being mislabeled. You know, in Europe, you have the protected denominations of origin and protected geographical indications. You know, that says Irish whiskey has to be made in Ireland, champagne has to be made in the Champagne region. But fraudsters will obviously try and fake that and mislabel stuff that was made somewhere else. And that's identified by that
network. So is there anything we can do when we're doing the shopping to avoid this?
Yeah, unfortunately, there's no real way to you know, definitely avoid food fraud. Like, a good place to start, I suppose, is to stick to the reputable retailers, the well-known food brands. But as we've seen from past experience, they, you know, can be unwitting suppliers of problematic products. You know, you can have producers themselves that don't realise what they have and what they're saying is one thing is actually something else, and that they're selling on products that have issues because the fraud is committed so many steps back in the food chain and they're just not aware of it. I suppose the best protection you can have maybe is to look out for products that have an extra layer or promise an extra layer of traceability. You know, those farm to fork schemes, the likes of the Board Bia Quality Assurance Programme, which say, you know, they are able to trace back where this product came from. And I suppose maybe the key is trying to shorten your supply chain on the products you're buying. So if it's grown and farmed in Ireland, there are fewer steps before it gets to you. Mm-hmm. If it's within the European Union, it's better than it coming from, you know, the other side of the world. So that maybe will help reduce your risk. You know, the side benefit of that is that you're also reducing your food miles and, you know, you're shopping in a more sustainable way in general, but it might also reduce the risk that what you have is something fraudulent.
You're probably going to be paying more though if you're going for products that have been verified in that way. Like, we were talking about Irish farming on the programme yesterday, and this is one of the ways to increase the value of the products we produce here if they're given those if customers are given those assurances around where the item is produced.
Absolutely, yeah. And you know, the Board Bia scheme is in part because, you know, you can't show favouritism under European rules to Irish meat in Irish shops versus, you know, something coming from Germany or Spain. So it's a way of trying allowing the Irish product to stand out. But yeah, as you say, it obviously costs money to be more traceable. The reason why, you know, often these steps are skipped by other producers is that it's a way of saving money if you're kind of just buying the cheapest thing possible and not worrying too much about the origins of it. So yeah, it is going to cost more and it's probably going to take more time as well. You know, you're going to have to, like, you know, reading the label and make, you know, almost asking questions and making sure the stuff is where you want it to be from.
Yeah, but it's probably worth the effort because you don't want to be eating cellulose in your Parmesan cheese.
Whatever else, no, or chalk or wood pulp or...
in your herbs and spices. Adam, thanks so much. Adam McGuire there, RT business journalist. We'll take a break back after this.
Text 51551 today with Claire Byrne on RTE Radio 1.